And with the warmer temperatures, it appears that spring has sprung here in the great Buckeye State. Of course, in the Sunshine State, well, Florida, because North Dakota, maybe it's South Dakota, is also the Sunshine State. But the Sunshine State to our south-southeast, it's pretty much always spring or summer. And we take a virtual visit to Boca Raton, FL, to our official station presidentologist and historical scholar and all-around interesting dude, Dr. Ron Feynman. We're going to talk about some articles that he's written, including one that has been published by the History News Network, and of course other things going on in Washington and environs. Ron, thank you again for joining us. This is the 50th time you've been on WWGH.
Good morning, Adam. Thank you very much for inviting me. And yes, it's the 50th time, the 40th with you, and 10 times with Scott Spears. It's amazing. It's been going on since February of last year.
How about them apples, as my dad used to say? 50 times, and it always seems like we run out of time when you're on, because the conversation is ever so stimulating. But that's part of the fun of radio. Dr. Feynman,
well, I've always had a good time.
Oh, yeah. He's a blogger, author. His most recent book about presidential assassinations is in paperback, and it's been selling quite well. He's a well-respected historical and presidential scholar, and he's kind enough to join us fairly often here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. We may have him on with Scott sometime in the near future. We're negotiating. His people are talking to our people, and we'll see if we can all shake hands and have the professor back on the station sometime soon. We talked last week, Ron. We spent time talking about a favorite first lady and presidential mother. She was also a second lady, one of only two women, besides Abigail Adams, of course, the other one, to have held those positions or titles or distinctions, Barbara Bush. Unfortunately, she did pass away later in the day, on last Tuesday when we spoke. And it's bittersweet. She had a long, productive life. She is respected by people of all political parties. You just don't think about a political party when you talk about Barbara Bush. It's just hard to say anything bad about the woman. She told it like it is. She was very smart, quick-witted, rather funny, too. You don't really hear a lot of her talking directly, but when you do, there's always a giggle or two coming out of my mouth. And someone who's had a tremendous influence on everybody who calls him or herself an American citizen, as well as current and past presidents. Just an incredible lady. And again, she had a long, long, productive life. Besides what we talked about last week, Ron, any more thoughts about Barbara Bush? Are you like I impressed that people of all political parties are putting aside their differences and really paying tribute to this great woman?
Yes, and I think she deserves it all. The one thing I must say, though, is one of the Trump supporters, Roger Stone, really attacked her and said terrible things about her, and that was disgraceful. It really was unacceptable. But we do have freedom of speech, so people can attack. But I think Barbara Bush was a wonderful first lady and a wonderful mother and wife, and indeed someone who I think really had an impact on promoting literacy. And also dealing with the AIDS issue as well. You know, she actually hugged AIDS babies and hugged other people with AIDS, and that was an important step to do in her time when there was so much fear about AIDS.
Yeah, without question. And we talked about how she wasn't afraid, not really to modify her appearance. She was proud of her white hair, proud of the fact that she looked, she looked grandmotherly. I remember the jokes when George Bush became president. Was Barbara really his grandmother, or is she really his wife? Because she's always, the Barbara Bush I've seen has always looked older. And believe me, I laughed along with everybody. But she has that image. It's like she is the grandmother or great-grandmother that we all wish we had. And even if we had beloved grandparents, as I did, you just love the way Barbara Bush carries herself. And what she has done—
I must tell you, however, that Barbara Bush, when you look at her picture when she got married or other pictures when she was in her 20s, she was beautiful. She was really a beautiful young lady. And I could see how George H.W. Bush was drawn to her right away. And, of course, he looked good, too. Their wedding picture and other pictures of her at a young age, she was really gorgeous. So, I mean, people age, but she was a very beautiful young lady.
Well, in the case of you and I, Ron, some people age more gracefully than others. yesterday, my age was pegged to 32. So I just sometimes I like to report, like, how old do people think I am and looking at me? And they said, oh, I thought you were about 32. I said, okay, well, thank you very much. To which I would probably say, like a lot of people say, I have socks that are more than 32. So we'll just,
I've had people,
just leave it at that.
I've had people think I'm 55 about your age. I know you're almost 55. So I'm flattered to be called 55. I mean, so we're both being judged 20 years younger than we actually are, which is great.
Yeah, Barbara Bush had that wisdom about her. And again, she wasn't afraid to be kind of sassy, and she told it like it is. And she, again, she wasn't afraid to let the world know her politics are not the same as her son's or her husband. She certainly is more to the left. And the literacy issue, I mean, it's come up, I guess, I hate to say it, but with the current president, he doesn't have quite the mastery of the English language as some other presidents. And, you know, Ron has a PhD, myself is someone fairly well-educated who's always big on grammar and
very
spelling.
Very well-educated in science.
Yeah, I mean, kind of get that from my mother, but it was a good example. Barbara Bush is someone whose legacy we need to pay attention to and understand that English is a difficult language, and learning language is exercise for the brain. And again, I say the brain, like any other body part, if you don't exercise it, it's going to atrophy. So learn to speak proper English. Understand there are a lot of quirks in this language. There are idioms. There are regional differences in language. And actually look at that as being a positive, not a negative. And I think Barbara Bush imparted that in all of us. And Laura Bush also.
Yes, I wanted to add about Barbara Bush that she made a joke about her son, George W. She said, people have asked her, how did George W. end up like he is? And she said, well, I smoked and drank when I was pregnant with him. that was quite funny, and he laughed about that, too.
Yeah, I guess George W. Bush and his pronunciation of nuclear, which isn't terrible. But, of course, we talked earlier that Jimmy Carter, known as one of our most intelligent presidents, but in the South they do talk differently. He used to say barbiturate instead of barbiturate. My mother heard that, and she just fell out of her chair. But as I mentioned, Ron, my mother thought anybody from the South was a hillbilly and a hick. And so she instantly thought that about Carter. But again, the irony is he is a very intelligent man. And talk about someone who's still productive. 40 years after he was elected to the office.
I wanted to mention he was not at the funeral of Barbara Bush. The Clintons were, the Obamas were, of course the Bushes were, and Mrs. Trump was there. But he was not, because he was overseas. And I'm thinking, he's overseas at 93. I bet he was involved. I don't know. I bet he was involved with Habitat for Humanity, because why else would he be overseas now? But even with his cancer diagnosis, he's traveling overseas. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Jimmy Carter does not wish to be thought of as his actual age. He still thinks he's 45. And you know what? That's great. Talk about being productive. Talk about an example for getting off of your fanny and making the world a better place. Ron, a photograph which is making its rounds over the internet, and not surprisingly, is of the people who attended the funeral. We have Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, of course, Melania Trump, all the Bushes. Carter, we mentioned, was absent, more than likely overseas, doing some great humanitarian work. Of course, Donald Trump was not there. And it seems like Melania looked kind of happy. And there's been talks on the internet about how she seems happier at a funeral than she does with her own husband. I'm sure you've seen those comments.
I have. It's hilarious. She's smiling. She was talking to Barack Obama.
Yeah, it seems like she's up there with Michelle, and they're both, you know, she has these heels that look like they're about 5 inches, but she and Michelle are both kind of tall. So an interesting photograph, certainly. Two very lovely ladies there to the right, Michelle Obama and Melania Trump. George W. Bush in the front, and of course, Bill and Hillary Clinton. So a nice photograph, something that certainly will elicit comments, as it has. And again, the comments about Melania seeming happier at the funeral than she does with her own husband. I'm not quite sure what to say about that. But, you know, when you're president... You will certainly be under scrutiny. People will comment things. They will say comments that may be inappropriate. That's part of what you get with that office. And
yeah, I was going to say, though, that, that certainly her being with the Clintons and the Obamas, the two couples that I guess Donald Trump hates the most, and that she's smiling, I'm sure it probably irritates him that he's with that she's with the, quote, enemy, as he sees it, with the Obamas and the Clintons.
I think I can hear them arguing as we speak, but we'll table that yes. for now.
Yeah.
Ron, you have written an article that is definitely becoming popular, if not in the pre-viral stage, and that's about when Donald Trump will be impeached or essentially forced to resign. It's been picked up by the History News Network, and that's going to provide lots of exposure. And again, opinions, people agreeing with you, people not agreeing with you. And this article is quite recent. Ron, why don't you go ahead and summarize it for our listeners first about exactly what you wrote and what the gist of the article is.
Yes. Okay, I'll be glad to do that. I had originally, of course, projected that Donald Trump would be gone before Zachary Taylor's 492 days in office, which is May 27th, 2018. And, of course, that's how I originally got on WWGH with Scott Spears and then with you. And I really thought it was going to happen. It still could, actually, with the new stuff about Michael Cohen. But probably, I have to concede at this point, not going to happen in the next 30 days or so, or a little more than 30 days, 40 days. But I do think when we look and see that after Taylor, the next shortest anniversary, the fourth shortest, is Warren G. Harding, WWGH, Marion, Ohio, which is interesting, which is exactly 29 months, 881 days. And that would come about by June 20th, 2019, which would be 2 years and 5 months in office for Donald Trump. And I really think for 14 months to go, 15 months gone, and with all the evidence coming out and all the news that keeps on adding on, I really think that Trump will not be there as long as Warren G. Harding, 881 days. And I want to point out that 2 weeks longer, 895 days, is Gerald Ford's time in office. And so I would think that, you know, these are the fourth and fifth shortest, but I would really seriously think at this stage that in the next year and 2 months, at some point, we will see Donald Trump resign from office because of what I believe will be the indictment of his children and other issues that will arise where he'll make a deal to resign and be put under pressure to do so. I really believe that. Now, I may be wrong because I was wrong apparently on this Zachary Taylor anniversary, but really, things are ratcheting up, and they're getting much more accelerated, and I really do think with a year and 2 months maximum to Harding's time in office, and then 2 more weeks for Ford, it is very likely that he's not going to Trump last as long as Harding or Gerald Ford.
Now, we've talked about Mike Pence ascending to the Oval Office, and we've also discussed that he might also resign, or
he could be if he's involved with collusion. That could be a real problem. Yes, and then the timing would be if he's forced out of this around the same time that there'd be no vice president and the Speaker of the House, whoever it is at the moment. Right now, Paul Ryan. Maybe later in the year could be someone else if the Republicans decide to ask him to quit sooner and let someone else like Jim Jordan of the congressional district that you're in there, as far as the radio station's concerned, or someone else. Or if it goes into next year and the Democrats win control, it could be Nancy Pelosi or some other leader who was chosen by the Democrats if they are the majority.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Really amazing.
We've talked about Jordan wanting to be Speaker, and I tend to agree. I think he has his eyes on the office. Wouldn't that be exciting if he, you know, I'm not saying we agree with his policies. We'll put that disclaimer in. But it certainly would be interesting if the person representing Marion, Ohio, and a large part of northern Ohio, would become president after he became Speaker. He's never quite, no. Politics will certainly throw you a curve just when you think you've figured it out.
I must tell you, though, my personal impression is Jim Jordan, I don't think, has the smarts to be Speaker of the House. I'm not very impressed with him. I know the district elected him, but honestly, my eyes roll and my head shakes when I watch him on TV because I'm thinking he's all right as a congressman, but the thought of him being Speaker possibly is a little amazing in my mind. But nobody ever said that you don't rise to the level of your mediocrity. You know, there is a saying something like that, and I think that could happen, yes.
So many possible scenarios, including if the Democrats get a majority and Nancy Pelosi or some other Democrat is Speaker, we could actually have a Democratic president.
You could have a woman Democrat who's not Hillary Clinton. How's that for a thought?
So a lot of, and wouldn't Nancy Pelosi also be the oldest president ever? She's well in her 70s, right? That would also be kind of interesting.
Yeah, she would be, I talk about birth, but she's born in 1930. She'd be past 78, so between 78, but on the way to 79. And in 2020, she would become 80, yes. I just don't know her exact birth date.
So the scenarios really very, very intriguing, just to say the least. And as I say, just when you thought you figured it out, you find out something different, and you have to go ahead and reconjecture and rethink over what you thought about previously.
Yeah, I see her birthday is March 26, 1940, not 1930, I'm sorry. So that would make her, she's 78, so she would be 78 in about 10 months when she became president, if it happened as early as January. But if it was after March next year, she'd be 79. Yeah, probably would be after, because it would take time, and it depends on timing, but she'd be between 78 and 80 years of age, yes. The oldest president, yes. Yeah.
Would that be possible? Do you think that has at least a 10% chance of occurring? Or what is the most likely thing to happen? Because I tend to think that Pence may be going the same time that Trump does, and we talked about how Paul Ryan, he's only in his late 40s, he's a fairly young man, that he is going to retire, spend time with his family, and doesn't have additional political aspirations, but he can find himself as president. And I tend to think he might like that position, since he did previously run for vice president. And that's
yes, I think that if it happens during this year and he's still the speaker, he would become president, yes. But then there's also speculation about his knowledge of Russian collusion, what Kevin McCarthy said, who might be the new speaker also, the one that he wants. There's a possibility of all of them being engaged in some kind of Russian collusion. That's why we don't really know all the facts. But if Mike Pence becomes president, at least short term, then he could pick a new vice president under the 25th Amendment. And, you know, there's these rumors of a so-called, I don't know how true it is, of an alliance between him and Nikki Haley, which supposedly irritates Donald Trump, but it may not be true, but it's been in the New York Times. So, I mean, Nikki Haley could end up as vice president, and I guess, you know, nobody's accusing her of any Russian collusion. If anything happens in that circumstance, she could become the first woman president.
Yeah, I think Haley would be a great VP, but she does not see eye to eye on religious issues like Pence does. She is not of the same religious convictions. She's open-minded about some of the things that Pence isn't about. And again,
Pence has a lot of problems, you know, as far as his lack of open-mindedness. It worries me a great deal. He's not crazy in the same way as Trump, but he's dangerous in a different way, I think, yes.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Pence tap Jordan as a vice president. They're similar in a lot of ways, and they are from neighboring states.
Oh my God.
But Jordan being an Ohioan would help support, because, you know, Ohio doesn't have tremendous amount of electoral votes. I think we're actually losing one in the next election, but it seems like the way Ohio goes is the way that the presidential election goes. And having an Ohioan who is, for the most part, popular. I mean, not everybody likes him. I'm no fan, certainly, but he did win office, and there are plenty of supporters, without question. And again, he does represent Marion. Love him or hate him, he's our local guy.
Yes, let me clarify that. Ohio will not lose an electoral vote until 2024 after the reapportionment. They will still have the same number this time, but in 2020. But in 2024, they will lose one. But I would say, if you're going to pick an Ohioan, who should Pence pick? John Kasich, the governor, who's going to be leaving. But I think he'd be an excellent choice for vice president or president.
Right. Well, that's another possibility. So we shall see. I'm sure, Ron, in 3-6 months from now, we'll have another talk about this and things will have changed. Or maybe we'll have a different president. Who knows?
We could have more than one president left in this term, is what you're saying, yes.
Yeah.
We could have two.
Switching gears a bit, Ron, you wrote over the weekend about a list of presidents who were widowed, and of course that list was recently appended with George H.W. Bush becoming a widower a few days ago, Richard Nixon in 1993, and Woodrow Wilson.
He only lasted a year beyond that, I want to point out. He died a year later.
I think it's
not a good sign for George H.W. Bush. You know?
I thought Nixon died like in the mid-90s, so I was thinking, okay.
94, about 11 months after his wife, yeah.
Woodrow Wilson in 1914, remarried in 1915 in office.
And the second Mrs. Wilson ran the government when he had his stroke, 1919.
And, of course, a president that most people don't even know was a president, Millard Fillmore, 1853. Not a lot of people know about Mr. Fillmore. When I was in school, I wrote a report about him once, so I always remembered the guy. But he wasn't considered to be
By the way, his wife died about 3 weeks after the term of office ended, and then he remarried later on, yeah.
It's interesting, though, that it seems like there haven't been a lot of presidents who've lost their wife in office or out of office. Now, we do know that women
only one out of four.
Right. Women live longer than men, and certainly, yes. Traditionally, the husband has been older. That isn't necessarily the case, but all recent presidents, it certainly has been. Reagan, for example, I think he was a good 10 years older than Nancy, and you probably know that better than I would, Ron, but he lived much...
Not 10. I think it's more like 4 or 5, actually, I think. Okay. Not 10, no.
Okay, well, of course,
but he was older, yeah.
I'll go and of course, he was also the first divorced president.
Yes. So,
we've had a few firsts, and of course, Donald Trump, I'm not sure how many times he's been divorced, but at least one or two times.
Two times divorced. Rudy Giuliani's about to be the third time divorced.
Well, it happens.
Yeah, but three times it was Giuliani, you know.
Well,
yeah.
That's how it is. That's how it is sometimes.
Yeah, but Rudy Giuliani's claiming that he thinks the investigation is going to end in 2 weeks. Everybody's got their eyes rolling. It's not going to end in 2 weeks. I don't know where he gets that idea.
Yeah,
that is crazy.
Not sure. Not sure about that one. So anyway, a sad, a bittersweet time, the loss of Barbara Bush. But you talk about someone who's had a great impact and an impact on me. And I think married couples, you know, look how long they were married with, 74 years, right?
73-plus years, yeah.
Keep in mind that you may have different beliefs, especially political beliefs, but that doesn't mean you can't love each other and respect each other. And the Bushes were really a model for that. Now, earlier on, Ron, Bush was either a Democrat or he was a rather liberal Republican or independent, right? He kind of became more conservative when he aligned with Reagan, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yes, actually, he was pro-choice, and then he became pro-life on the issue of abortion, while his wife quietly disagreed with his switch. But actually, a lot of presidents or candidates change. People are not aware that if you look back at Bill Clinton and Al Gore, they were once pro-life and both became pro-choice. So that's a surprise. People do switch around in their campaigns, and people forget what they were earlier. And, of course, Ronald Reagan was a liberal Democrat, a New Deal FDR supporter, and then he became a conservative Republican. So there's a lot of switches around. And also Donald Trump once sounded like a liberal Democrat, you know, in New York City. He really was, at least in what he said. And I wish he had gone that direction, but he chose not to.
So the Donald Trump we're getting in 2018 is not the Donald Trump who about 30 years ago had aspirations for higher office. And people do change. They do evolve. And that's one thing about Barbara Bush, too. She wasn't going to change her beliefs. She was an independent person who stood by her husband, even if they didn't always see eye to eye. And I think people could learn a lesson from that. I think our divorce rate wouldn't be 50% plus if people took a model themselves after the admiration and respect that the Bushes had for each other. We're talking to Dr. Ron Feinman on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Current political topics, presidential history, and, of course, and like any show with me, always a wisecrack or two. On the 20th, Ron, of course, that day was 420, which was known for a lot of memes over Facebook. And we'll kind of leave it at that. That was last Friday. Republican presidential administrations from Richard Nixon, and one of my favorite presidents, to Donald Trump, indictments, convictions, prison time, plus Warren G. Harding and Ulysses S. Grant. We're in the midst of the most corrupt series of presidential scandals in American history in the 15 months of the Trump administration. Under Ford and Carter, there were no serious protracted scandals of note. Now, Ron, you wouldn't call Ford pardoning Nixon, that really wasn't a scandal, right? That was more just a controversial act.
I would not call that a scandal. And Carter, there were some minor issues, but nothing on the level of Nixon, not on the level of Reagan, and not on the level of the second Bush, and not on the level of Trump. The first Bush, not as much. But really, even Clinton, of course, all this stuff about the sex scandals and these investigations by the Republicans, but nothing that really led to serious indictments, convictions, and prison time. So a lot of it was just investigation, and that included under Obama with Hillary Clinton, with all those investigations of Benghazi, and yet nothing coming out of it.
Now, Clinton was impeached, but the impeachment didn't go through. and it seemed like the Lewinsky stuff.
Well, impeachment went through, but not the conviction. Impeachment, he was impeached.
Right, but it didn't get followed through because it wasn't voted on by the enough members of Congress.
The Senate, yes.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Okay, well, I figured you would know, obviously, but 2/3 of the Senate has to approve it, right? Is that the official law?
That's right, and with him, with Clinton, it was 50-50 on one count and 55-45 on the other count.
It was somewhat close.
Not anywhere near 67, you know.
But he did escape by the hair of his chinny-chin-chin, so.
And also Andrew Johnson did the same back in 1868, yes.
Now, under George...
But Harding and Grant were very bad times for corruption, Harding's administration and Grant's. I mentioned that in that article, too.
Under George W. Bush, 16 indictments, 16 convictions, 9 sent to prison. Many people working for Bush resigned rather than testify in many investigations. And the Scooter Libby story, that was a biggie. I remember that,
yes,
that quite well. And under Barack Obama, there were no serious violations of the law or scandals, despite investigations by Republican congressional committees, including Hillary Clinton after the Benghazi Libya attack on the U.S. embassy by Muslim extremists. So you're saying, Ron, and we've talked about this before, we've certainly touched on it almost every show, this is the most corrupt administration ever. And
well, it's only 15 months, and already we can see it is, and it's going to keep on multiplying, you know, because obviously it's not all out yet. But yes, it's worse than Nixon, worse than Harding, worse than Grant, worse than Reagan.
Let's turn the clock back to when Ford took office after Nixon resigned. I remember watching that on TV with my dad and seeing Ford become president, realizing he was the first president never to be elected directly by the people, even though, as we've talked about, he gets a bad rap. He did a fairly good job in a very difficult time, inflation, et cetera, and, of course, all the Watergate stuff. When he took office, Ron, did you think he was going to give Nixon a full pardon, or did you think Nixon might find himself behind bars?
I thought that he was not going to give him a pardon, and most people who were Democrats condemned him for it. But 25 years later, after reflection, it was felt differently, and Ted Kennedy and the Kennedy Library gave former President Ford a special award for courage and, you know, all that. And I think the whole attitude about the pardon changed over time, but it was very partisan and political at the time, of course. But I actually thought Nixon might end up in prison, but also he had phlebitis of the left leg. He was very sick right about a month after he left, so I think that might have also been a factor that led to Ford deciding to pardon him, because he was in poor health. And actually, it was thought he might not live out the year at the time. He was very sick, had a very serious infection.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time thinking, is this going to be like James K. Polk's 105 days of retirement and then dying? Because it really seemed possible in the fall of 74 that Nixon might die, but he recovered and lived another 20 years.
So if Pence becomes president, with Trump resigning or being impeached or what have you, could we see him in jail? We've discussed this. It's certainly been pondered in the media. It just seems unthinkable that a president could go to jail. We've had governors go to jail, mayors. The mayor of Detroit, he went to jail. He was
Governor Blagojevich of Illinois.
Yeah, he was a bad guy for sure. I mean, multiple yes, governors and mayors. Again, Detroit, that's not far from here, and neither is Illinois. And it's like, well, they can go to jail. Why can't the president? Well, I think he probably could.
Well, I think in other countries it's happening. It happened in Brazil. The former president went to jail. Or prison, I guess the term, not jail. I would think he should be, but frankly, I think Mike Pence probably would pardon him like Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon. So, but still, when you accept a pardon, it's basically saying you admit that you did wrong and you're accepting a pardon. If there's nothing to be pardoned over, you wouldn't accept it. So in a way, it is an admission of guilt.
So there's been, I guess, not really plea bargaining, but plea bargaining type acts. I remember with Clinton and one of the scandals, I forget which one, but I'm sure you remember, Ron, he agreed not to practice law for like 5 years or 10 years or whatever in exchange for not getting a conviction for something. But with Trump, he's not an attorney. Again, he doesn't have any elected political office experience. So what could he negotiate? Whereas with, and I don't know if Nixon also, he was a lawyer, I believe. I don't know if he negotiated also not to practice law for a certain period of time after his pardon or leaving office. And maybe you can clarify that for us. But what kind of bargaining chips would Trump have if he were to exchange that for not facing a criminal conviction?
Well, I think that he might want to save his family members who seem to be likely to be indicted, that it might be a deal, which would, by the way, harm Pence or whoever the president was who gave it. Like, honestly, if it was, say, a Democrat, they probably would not give a pardon if it came out to be the next person's a Democrat. But if it's Ryan or it's Pence or anybody else, I think likely they would pardon the family members, and that would kill them as far as having any chance to be elected in 2020.
Now, remind me, Ron, I don't want to look on Wikipedia. I'll just ask you, what was the deal with Bill Clinton where he agreed not to practice law for a few years in exchange for a reduced or removed charge of that he faced?
Well, actually, from what I recall, I'm not looking it up now, I think he gave up his license to practice law. He just gave it up. I think it was taken away from him, if I'm correct. Because really, as a former president, he wouldn't be practicing law. And, you know, he can make money just from speeches and writing. So at that point, it wouldn't matter, you know, that he would really care about it. But Spiro Agnew also gave up his right to practice law, you know, on his conviction, you know, or his being, I should say, forced to resign in 1973. So, but people at that level are not thinking about going back to practicing law. Who would really ask them to represent them? These are people who can make money in other ways.
Now, we had the former president, who, of course, became a Supreme Court justice after his presidency.
William Howard Taft, yes.
But that was a while back, but it could happen.
Chief Justice, actually.
About Obama. He would be, and I agree, I think he'd be great for the Supreme Court, and that would involve practicing.
Well, I agree, I want to point out, Taft was appointed by Warren G. Harding to be Chief Justice, and he was there for 9 years, 1921 to 1930.
All right. A lot of Marian connections in today's show. I must say, but
yes.
Obama's still just in his 50s. He certainly could become a Supreme Court justice. You never know.
If a Democrat is elected.
Right. One of the many things that we may find in the headlines. A few days ago, Ron, you wrote about Governor Jerry Brown of California getting ready to leave office at age 80. Now, we've talked about Joe Biden, who he's in his late 70s. He's been around.
He'll be 78 in 2020. Yeah, he'll
right. It seems like he's been around since the Declaration of Independence, and he sort of has been. He was one of the youngest senators when he became a senator, and now he's one of the oldest. So a salute to Mr. Biden, and he has presidential aspirations, so he is not finished with his political career yet. Brown was elected governor in 1974, and I remember, when I was growing up in the mid-70s, Jerry Brown was governor. And it's like, he's still governor. Well, goodness sakes, that's pretty
yes.
impressive. He served two terms in office until 1982. He became governor when he was 36 years old, youngest governor in modern California history. 28 years later, I guess he got bored, didn't want to be retired anymore. He was elected in 2010 and is finishing a second round of two consecutive terms. So over a period of 36 years, he served more years in office than all but a few state governors in American history. By the time he retires in January, only Terry Branstad of Iowa, now ambassador to China with 22 years, 4 months, and George Clinton of New York, and South Dakota Governor William Janklow will have served longer than Brown. Brown sought the presidency.
And one day less is George Wallace. Notice, one day less is Governor George Wallace of Alabama. It was, of course, very controversial.
Brown also sought the presidency in 76 and 1980 against Jimmy Carter, and in 1992 against William Jefferson Clinton. I guess considering that Arnold Schwarzenegger was a recent governor of California, he probably wasn't overly qualified for that job. He didn't do a bad job, not at all. He certainly is an interesting dude. Certainly quite a different governor than Jerry Brown. But that's what part of what makes politics fun. We have people of differing qualifications.
Yes.
Not to mention either Bush with a lot of political experience versus our current president versus Obama, who is certainly a rising young star but didn't have all that much experience when he became president. So it's good to have a little variety, I guess. Now, Ron, in this article, you're indicating that Brown is one of our greatest governors and is a person with a great history of service to his state and to the country. I mean, California is the most populous state in the country. And a lot of what goes on in California affects not just the rest of the country, but the world. Any thoughts on that you want to share with our listeners?
About Brown's effect on the country?
Yeah, and his legacy.
Well, I think that He brought California back from crises when he came in 2010, 2011. And I think California is really one of the best, you know, it's a tough place to govern, but I think he's done a very good job. And California leads on issues like immigration and on the environment. And I think, you know, I'd be honest, years ago when he was young, I thought he was flaky. He was called flaky. I think now in his older age, he comes across very solidly. And that's why, jokingly, I'm saying he'll be 82, but I could almost believe, although he wouldn't be nominated, that he might think, why can't I run? Why should I have an age limit? And if Joe Biden is going to be 78 in 2020 and Bernie Sanders is 79, and I've been governor and, you know, and all that of the biggest state, and they haven't. They're from Vermont and from Delaware. Why not try at 82? But there's no way I could imagine he would be the nominee. But I think he has a record that he can be quite proud of, including being mayor of Oakland as well, and also California Attorney General and California Secretary of State. So he's had a sensational record, and whoever is going to be his biographer will have a lot of great information to tell us about and to bring out how great a governor I think he's been. I think he's one of the best ever.
So the fact that he was governor and then took over a generation, 28 years, bit of a sabbatical, then he's governor again. Is the Jerry Brown of 2018 different from the Jerry Brown of the 70s?
Well, he's not flaky in the same way. It's hard to explain what I mean by flaky. He came across as weird and wacky back then. I think now he's much more settled. He finally got married about 10 years ago. He was never married before. And I just think that he is a very serious-minded person, and he challenges everything Donald Trump does because he thinks Donald Trump is a tragedy for the country, and I happen to agree with him on that.
Okay. Well, he certainly would evolve. Again, talking about 36 versus 80, a big difference.
Yes.
And speaking about Joe Biden, who's kind of had a similar life where he was very young, relatively.
He was 30 when he was actually 29 when he was elected. A few weeks after the election, he turned 30. He couldn't have been sworn in if he wasn't, but he was born in late November, so he was 29, almost 30, a few weeks before his 30th birthday, yes.
So even more of a difference than Jerry Brown. Well, you know, we're both fans of Joe Biden. Ron, how is the Joe Biden at age 29 different from the Joe Biden in his late 70s?
That's an interesting question. I'd like to say that he's more careful in what he says, but actually he does still tend to put his foot in his mouth, usually in ways that are just embarrassing but not harmful, because he does tend to, you know, to talk loosely, like when he made the statement that, you know, talking about Trump being fat and ugly and that he would take him in the back of the schoolyard. That was not an appropriate thing to say. And I said, oh, Joe, why do you have to do that? But it's not the kind of thing that's a serious issue. It's more just, you know, maybe you should think before you speak kind of thing.
So we would say that Biden is kind of goofy in a lovable way, but Donald
yes,
Trump,
I think so.
Yeah, he needs to watch what he says, because some of what he says can be dangerous.
Yes.
And that's kind of the difference. I guess we'll conclude
big
the show
difference.
With the South Korea, North Korea, and Kim Jong-un indicating about the nuclear weapons. Any thoughts on that? Are we really going to see an end to this threat of nuclear intervention, or is this something that he's just saying? And we may.
I am stunned by what Kim Jong-un is saying. I don't know what to make of it. I do think we cannot trust him at this point, where he's stopping nuclear testing. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how the president is going to deal with it, because he doesn't have background knowledge and information on the Koreans' history situation that he should have, and he has no Secretary of State of the moment, and the State Department's been denuded to a great extent. So I am concerned that he might go into something, and we might be expecting too much, and that could actually provoke more danger of a World War III. I hope not. But I don't know what Kim is doing. I mean, Kim, I think, is a lot smarter than we think, and he may be trying to outdo Trump and might very well possibly be able to do it. But I am worried about his supposed peace initiative now, because I don't really believe it.
So we're not ones to believe what Kim Jong-un says.
No, I would not trust him, even if he was to say, here, drink this. I'd be worried that he's trying to put something in it.
And you think he's kind of playing a chess game, and he is quite smart.
Yes, I mean, even though I think he's wacky, I think he's smarter than people think, and I think Trump thinks he's smart, but he has no real background in knowledge. He may be for real estate, but I don't think he knows what he's doing, and he could be outdone by Kim, and that could make him angry and could lead to him, talking about the president, overreacting, not just Kim, and that's what worries me.
Well, we shall see. Let's hope we can get along, as we talked about the Bushes, understand we have differences, but still shake hands and still care about each other. It's amazing how the milk of human kindness can get people far in this world. Ron, thanks again. Thanks again for joining us on this Tuesday
morning.
Time is
gone already, huh?
Sorry?
I said the time is gone already, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, time flies when you're having fun. But we always
find... We should have an all-day show, not just 40 minutes.
Yeah, why not just have the all-day talk show, and that's okay. I'm sure at some time I'd run out of things to say, but at this point, you know, 41 minutes... I could probably spend 41 more minutes, but the boss says I have to clock out at 11 o'clock today, so that is what I shall do. Be sure to check out...
Happy 50th show. Happy 40th with
number
you and 50th
50.
Show for me.
Anyway, be sure to purchase Ron's book about presidential assassinations. Why don't you tell us, Ron, quickly how to get a copy of that book?
Okay, the title is Assassination Threats in the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama, Roman Littlefield Publishers. It can be purchased from the publisher or from Amazon, Books a Million, or Barnes & Noble. And it's in paperback, very reasonably priced, also in hardcover, but very reasonably priced, particularly on Amazon. And it's a good read, and it covers everything through 2014.
And you can tell... Ron is a presidentologist with a capital P, a word that I invented just for him, as he has a wealth of knowledge. I even ask him questions. I don't bother checking Wikipedia. I just ask him because he always seems to know. Thanks again, Ron Fineman, for being with us on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Yes, thank you so much again, Adam.